Good day. Today is January 23rd. Welcome to And For Other Things. I'm Andy Aplikowski. That's what I decided the name of this podcast will be. That's a URL I picked up a long, long time ago, maybe 10 years ago, when conservative politicians were trying to stop liberal ones from shoving policies into spending and unrelated bills to get around the single subject rules. The bill would be called something like Public Safety and For Other Things, so they could throw anything they wanted in there, and then you couldn't challenge it in the courts. It just so happens that's a great name for this podcast. So as I'm struggling to find a purpose and a new career, I can't commit to a daily, weekly, or set patterns for this because I don't know what I'm going to be doing for work. But so far, these first two recordings respond by something that spurred me in a way that I used to get with my old blog, where I just felt like I had to respond and learned you have to be a little more thoughtful and put some more thought into this. So I can fire out 10 of these a day like I used with the old blog post. But I'll be working on making this a legit podcast with iTunes and or Jack and Ben, the pod battle thing. But for now, here goes. Welcome to And For Other Things. I'm Andy Aplikowski. I recently got dragged into one of those online discussion chain emails kind of arguments regarding a chain mail that someone forwarded. You know the ones. They're the kind your mom or dad send you that have already been open copied like 10 times already. There's thousands of email addresses just sitting there. But it's a nice story about a college baseball coach, giving a speech to a National Coaches Association. The subsequent email argument turned political and it got kind of nasty and ugly. And I thought this was a great chance to go over this story from this coach and my feelings and where I think it goes. So I'll post a link to, I found just to make sure it was legit, I'll post a link to the full email or this article about this coach with the link to this. So you can go there for that. But starts out this way. I'll just kind of go through some of the highlights of it. 17 inches. You will not regret reading this. This is about, there's a young coach, I think he's a little league coach, going to a National Coaches Association meeting where coaches from all levels, little league to majors, are there. And there's a 78-year-old coach named Coach John Scalinos is there. He's been 78 years old. He'd been coaching for over 50 years for various colleges. And he gets up as they're checking into the hotel for this thing, over 4,000 coaches. Everyone's talking about, oh, man, I can't believe this guy's here again. It's worth every penny, worth every penny. So this old man shuffles onto the stage and, you know, dressed like an old man would, is the way they describe it. But he's got a home plate, like an actual baseball home plate hanging around his neck, like a necklace. He's speaking for a long time, and everyone starts laughing a little bit because a lot of the people have seen him before. And Coach Linos goes, you're probably wondering why I'm wearing this home plate around my neck. I may be old, but I'm not crazy. The reason I stand before you today is to share with you baseball people what I've learned in my life, what I've learned about home plate in my 78 years. And then he asked the crowd how many Little League coaches were in the room. And a bunch of people raised their hands. He asked them, how wide is home plate? And some quiet, and someone answers sheepishly, 17 inches. That's right, he said. And he goes, how about in Babe Ruth's day? Any Babe Ruth coaches? Or in Babe Ruth's? Any Babe Ruth coaches out there? Another long pause. 17 inches. That's right. How many high school coaches? 17 inches. College? 17 inches. Minor league? Right. Majors? Yeah, right. 17 inches, he confirmed. Yes. And what do you do with that big league pitcher who can't throw the ball over 17 inches? Well, the Twins sign him. But that was my input there. They send him to Pocatello. This is a minor league place, I'm assuming, someplace. And it goes on. The point of this is you don't widen the plate if the guy can't get it over. And he goes on. And he goes, what do you do with when your player shows up late to practice, or if your team rules forbid facial hair, or a guy shows up or caught drinking, or all these different rules that you have in place? Do you change the rules to fit your player, or do you make the players fit the rules? Well, that's part of baseball. And watch a little bit of video of this coach, just again making sure this is a legitimate thing and that this guy's real. And you know, they followed him around back when he was still coaching. And, you know, he had him mic'd up for one of the games, and he's, you know, guy strikes those, oh, what'd you swing at that for? It was kind of entertaining. Fun guy if you like baseball. But now he goes on to go beyond why this is just about baseball and everything like that, more external, outside the lines, as he would say. He turns around home plate and he starts drawing on it. And then he turns it around and reveals it's got a door and a window. It's a little house. And then he goes on and talks about how we don't teach our kids accountability. There's no consequences for failing to meet standards. We just widen the plate. And then he puts a small American flag on and draws out on the top of the house on the home plate. And he says, the problem with our schools today, the quality of our education is going downhill fast, and teachers have been stripped of the tools they need to be successful and to educate and discipline our young people. We're allowing others to widen home plate. Where is this getting us? Silence from the crowd. He then turned the flag into a cross. And he said, the problem in the church, where powerful people in positions of authority have taken advantage of young children, only to have such atrocities swept under the rug for years. Our church leaders are widening home plate in themselves, or home plate for themselves, and we allow it. He goes on. And the same is true with our government. Our so-called representatives make rules for us that don't apply to themselves. They take bribes from lobbyists in foreign countries. They no longer serve us, and we allow them to widen home plate. We see our country falling back into a dark abyss. Well, we just watch. And this young coach that's watching this was amazed. He thought he was here to learn about baseball and run better practices to be ready for games. And he's an old man with a home plate around his neck. And he's learning something about life and about himself and about our weaknesses and responsibilities as a leader. And he says, if I'm lucky, or Coach Colino says, if I am lucky, you will remember one thing from this old coach today. It is this: if we fail to hold ourselves to a higher standard, a standard of what we know to be right, if we fail to hold our spouses and our children to the same standards, if we are unwilling or unable to provide consequences when they do not meet the standard, and if our schools and churches or our government fail to hold themselves accountable to all those they serve, there is one thing to look forward to. Coach Lino turns around home plate at this time. To the back of it is black. We have dark days ahead. Now, Coach Salinas died in 2009 at age of 91, so before Trump's time. But the email chain that I was on, the discussion that happened, turned bitter, nasty, and with someone demanded someone else renounce Trump. It's the new thing. Democrats and liberals are asking Republicans to renounce Trump, like he's a king or something like that. You know, a pox on all their houses. So, and that's where reading this email from about this baseball thing 10, 15 years or 11 years ago, 20 years ago now at this point, I just thought it was very, that little response from someone on this email, just, it made me think, you know, we're such a polarized thing that I just, you know, relatively long response that I sent back, and I just kind of want to go through what I said. And he said, here goes. I hope no one in any family is demanding political conformity to their beliefs and standards in order to be part of that family or group. That is not the message of this story about a guy who died in 2009. By the way, remarkably, that was back when Trump was still a New York liberal Democrat, donating heavily to politicians like Bill and Hillary Clinton. You know, for those of you that don't know, I don't really initiate political talk at the events like I used to. In fact, I don't enjoy going to a lot of them anymore. But when I do, I will only talk politics if people start the dialogue. But I don't go looking for debates anymore. There was one event, my wife was called a racist. One of the very first Christmas, one of the first Christmas parties we went to after we got married. And that's when I saw how ugly and divisive politics can get when we take it into our, you know, friends and family groups. I'm still a little really embarrassed about it, and it caused lasting pain for me because I think the idea of her being a racist is not based on her. None of these people even met her before, but it was said to her because they thought I'm a racist too. I must be a racist because I'm a Republican, and it hurt. I mean, no one likes being called something they're not, and racist is one of the new things that you throw it out there, and there's, how do you prove you're not racist, you know? The fact is, we don't really know each other anymore. It got me thinking about how most people I know have different relationships than I did with my brothers and sisters or my friends. Everyone has a different way they base their things on, and there's no one way. If someone doesn't have exactly what you have, it doesn't mean they're right or wrong, or you're right and they're wrong. For those that don't know, my mom was 40 and my dad was 53 when I was born, so very late life, and I grew up with my friends. My friend's grandparents were the age of my parents as I got older, and it was always a weird thing. And most of my siblings had moved out by the time I was nearing adulthood. They were long gone before I really started my life. And in this digital world, we think we know everything about everyone, even if we've never met them. But what we see is people at their best and worst online, not on a daily basis, where we see the real them, where we know what is in their heart and most importantly in their head. Even the most successful and glamorous celebrities or athletes own a pair of sweatpants and like to eat potato chips. They don't look, perform, or act exactly like that time we see them at the Grammys or in that movie or in the World Series. But we think that every single day in their life is perfect like that. So we want to emulate them and be just like them. It's not the real them. Even the best politicians have someone else writing their speeches. It's an act. It's all an act. One email forwarded or one Facebook post from someone doesn't define them. It's what's in their heart and head that does. We can't really get to know what's in either of those from a distance, online, or by just lumping them in with some political figures that they might support. I only got one chance to play catch with my dad that I can remember. Believe it or not, I was a pretty darn athletic kid who was pretty darn good at baseball. And here I am with my 76-year-old dad, who was a fat guy with one eye, couldn't throw, catch, or even bend over trying to hit me fly balls. If anyone saw us down at the park by our old house for that brief 15 minutes, I'm sure it was pathetic looking. But for me, that was one of the best days of my life as a kid. It makes it even more memorable to me now, knowing that he did it when he couldn't physically do it, but he still tried because I needed him to show me some love. The kind of love that the other kids got and talked about it all the time. The fact is, he didn't teach me how to play catch like the other kids' dads did. I don't really know who taught me. I think like most things, I taught myself by watching others do it. I didn't have parents or brothers close enough to my age or even at home anymore, like so many other young boys did, to go play catch with or just go teach each other stuff. And that's not anyone's fault. But I get to remember that one time my dad and I did play catch, and it means even more to me now. But I never realized it at the time until it was too late to say thank you to him for trying. Even though it wasn't exactly like what the other kids talked about it'd be like. You're probably asking, what's the point? I said one of the respondents in this email, chainmail discussion, said that the sender had to renounce Trump and was inspired to demand that by this email. And I went on. Please don't pigeonhole anyone for his or her political beliefs into the one-size-fits-all good and evil boxes. The most frustrating thing to me is when people assume they know how I will act, speak, or vote before I do. It happens to me all the time. For example, that time some people thought that I was a racist simply because I'm a Republican. No proof, just guilt by association. No, you're evil. Even in my Republican circle, some Republicans treat me like I did something wrong long before I even did it, and in many cases, I never actually did do it or say what people think they've heard about me. I joke my reputation gets in the door before I do, and people have made up their minds before they ever meet me. Which is just like what most people do with politicians or political activists. By the way, we prejudge or show prejudice towards them. Our minds are already made up. Democrats, example for this that I use that some people don't really know about. Some people say I complain about it too much, but here goes. Democrats mailed out thousands and thousands of big glossy color mailers with a few easily refutable lies about me when I ran for the state Senate a couple years ago. Those lies were started by a wealthy Republican donor and his lobbyist friends a few weeks earlier to make sure that center-right ally groups, who normally help candidates like me, didn't help or donate to me because I didn't support this donor's preferred candidate in some previous primary or something like that. What started as whispers behind the scenes was eventually published in the official newspaper of Anoka County, even though I had attempted to set the record straight numerous times. You see that donor who owns that paper, so now all 260,000 Anoka County residents can see those lies online in perpetuity. But it gets worse. The Postal Union, whose members worked against me because their union bosses told them to do so in this election, it was so cruel. They returned the undeliverable mailers to my house, not the address on the flyer. So all of these lies about me, this big color thing, they even stole one of our wedding photos online to use in this. And they said, I have hundreds of these coming to me just days after the election. Just more salt and rubbed in the wound. There's a lot of people that say I took the loss so hard. Well, it was just psychological warfare going on in this. You see, people said I did everything I was supposed to do as a candidate. Worked hard, raised money, and I should have won. But a few powerful people behind the scenes tarred and feathered me. Many people still think those lies about me are true. And as they say, the lie gets halfway around the world before the truth can even get its boots on. At least I learned something from that experience. And I hope people can see that I'm different than I used to be when I was the bomb-throwing name caller. You can't imagine the emotional toll politicians and candidates go through seeing themselves lied about. People actually think I was arrested, which I never have been. Or that I worked in a bar and sold booze to kids or someone who was obviously over intoxicated. I never worked at a bar, nor sold to kids. In fact, I worked at a liquor store in Northeast Minneapolis, and I passed the police Minneapolis police sting on underage buyers. It was a funny story. I was alone at the register on a busy night. The other guy was off at lunch, and a kid came up, wanted to buy smokes, and I carded him, and I denied him. And the next person in line pulls out a badge, shoves it in my face, and said, "Congratulations, that was a sting, and you passed. I have a form I'd like you to fill out." Nervous, but seeing a big line of customers, I said to the officer, "Okay, I'll do that. Thanks. Can you step aside? Let me take care of these customers first." Back to my email here. And then I remember it had happened before, this prejudiced view projected on me, that I was a racist, and I married one too. Painful on a soul-crushing level. It's easy to fire off an email. Trust me, I know. And sometimes hitting send or publish feels so good. You thump your chest and think, "Yeah, how do you like me now?" Maybe your attempt to offend or shame the other person into silence or surrender isn't helping. As I said, I try to avoid certain gatherings now because I feel I'm prejudged or looked down upon for my politics or because of the lies in that flyer or one said behind my back when I was not even in the room. Events I used to enjoy going to. It's painful. It really hurts. It's made the last few years extra lonely and tough. I guess what I'm saying is sometimes we just don't know what's going on in each other's lives or in their heads. Maybe we should all stop assuming we can put everyone into these convenient little political boxes of good and evil. Our society would be a much better place if everyone did that. But I fear it's too late. You know, are we heading to darkness, the dark days, as Coach Leno said? Our politics is so divided in their country right now. It's hard to believe and see that we can make it through this. These massive protests and counter-protests are the new norm. Free speech now belongs to those with greater numbers or louder megaphones. Or firing back an angry email reply. That's not democracy. People are screaming at people. And people are just screaming louder and louder so they can't even hear what the other side is saying. It's going to divide us even further. I think some call it tribalism. The idea that you must defeat anyone not in your tribe unless your tribe and this other tribe have an agreement to defeat this other tribe. We don't see the individuals anymore. We see the teams. It's us versus them. We see the political boxes of good and evil and just shove people into them based on a quick glance or a single moment in time because it's easier and makes us feel good. Calling someone a racist makes it easy to say you did something about stopping racism. But what if that person isn't even racist? Maybe we should all try not doing that with our family or friends going forward. We should try to avoid saying something hurtful to someone when it may not actually be true. And if we disagree on politics, then just change the subject. If someone's politics is more important than your family or group of friends, well, I guess, you know, you're really not part of that group and they're not, really not your friends. I just know if we continue to be a country with lists of people or groups we refuse to even talk to, we are in serious trouble. Our politics resembles now, I mean, what's going on in our country, it resembles what happened in the Eagles-Vikings game or afterwards. You know, the Eagles fans just throwing stuff at Vikings fans and throwing bottles at the Vikings buses they're trying to leave. And I even saw pictures of people carrying a banner around saying, F that 100-year-old Vikings fan. What is this? Politics looks the same way. It's just disgusting. And I just thought this was a good little thing of someone misinterpreting this story about Coach Scalino and holding people to standards and it being twisted into this radical political thing where if you don't denounce Trump, you're not fit to be my friend or my family member. This, we got to stop that. All of our groups, you know, in Republican politics or Democrat politics, if you're not perfect, you don't give me 100% of what I want, you're dead to me. I'm gonna force you out. I'm gonna make you quit. You know, Democrats are freaking out right now, the activists, because Democrats caved on the shutdown over amnesty. They want amnesty. They call it Dreamers, but it's illegal immigrants, shouldn't be in the country. They tried to shut down the entire federal government and all of the funding for all these little things that everyone's been trying to hold over Republicans' heads over amnesty. And thankfully, the Democrats caved. Schumer's Democrats caved in the Senate, and they passed this short-term funding bill. But they're going to keep fighting for amnesty. But the fact that that for some of the activists on the left, that Schumer and the Democrats caved is they want blood. And we heard a few weeks ago, Al Franken, who was forced to resign from the Senate over sexual harassment allegations, that one of the wealthy donors who donates maxes out to all the Democrat candidates across the country is threatening to withhold money for any of the Democrats who publicly called for Franken to resign. And it happens on the right too. We had Republicans saying if Trump, after the meeting a few weeks ago, the public televised meeting on immigration, and Trump sounded like he would be willing to compromise on immigration to get the wall, some of the Republicans freaked out. And even if in the shutdown, I mean, Senator Mike Lee and Rand Paul both voted against this compromise temporary funding for reasonable reasons. They felt the need to say show up as a no vote. So one can, I think Senator Paul said that it's not a permanent funding or it's unbalanced, so I'm voting no, which he does on everything. I'll give him, he's consistent. Senator Lee said he doesn't believe in these short-term fixes. He wants a transparent process. I get it. I'm not disparaging it, but it's just, I'm showing the fairness of both sides. They both sides do it. And it carries on down the way where you have situations where we were so busy fighting to purify our own side that we do the same thing as of Democrats versus Republicans. I get it. You fight the battle in the election and then you have to govern. I get it. But Republicans and Democrats alike, they spend all of their time culling the herd of any weaklings that they see that we start to not like each other. And the governor's race in Minnesota here, there's allegations flying around that one candidate is stealing the URL of another and this, and people saying stuff behind backs. And what is it solving? I don't know. I worry that we as a country have lost the ability to actually relate to each other and move forward and even know what standards we're trying to hold people to. I mean, people are being judged for things 20, 30, 10, 5, 2 years ago or something that they might have never said. And you can make things up and a lie gets around the world before the truth can even get its boots on. And I think just we as a country have to really sit down and the whole way we fix the country, you know, they say you can't turn around the Titanic overnight. We have to think about what we do, and that's something I did. I came out of that election and went through, we sold our family business, and it was a lot of emotions and things going on and other things in my life that just have been very hard to deal with. And it got me to really think and dwell and say, you know, when I ran for deputy chair, I said early on, I'm not attacking my opponents. And even though I was being lied about constantly by some of them and their supporters, and I didn't attack. And I said, I'm not going to, I don't want to run for deputy chair in a way that I'm going to say something about one of my opponents that's going to make you not like them and not make you not think they can do the job. Because that's what's been happening so long, that during a campaign, people have said things just to win, to beat the other guy. Jack always says, blowing out someone else's candle out so yours looks brighter. And that may win you that contest, but I think we're losing the war because that person might come in someday and we might need them. A great example, that 2010 Tom Emmer running for governor. He was being attacked by whoever was running against him at the time, and they were bringing up the drunk driving charges for Emmer from 20 and 30 years ago. No one was hurt. Drunk driving's wrong. Get that. No problem since for Mr. Emmer. I mean, this was, 6 months before the election. That stuff happened during the endorsement, which Tom won. And then I remember it was 2 days, the weekend before the election. My girlfriend at the time had one of the Tom Emmer hockey jerseys and was at the grocery store. And some lady came up, or some guy came up and said, "You're not going to vote for that bleeping drunk Emmer, are you?" Right in her face. I mean, what is that? I mean, it's that, see, I told you, you know, based on a lie. You know, I think if I remember, the Democrats ran an ad that implied that Tom Emmer killed some person's child. You know, it's nasty, divisive stuff, and it's not helping. You know, we're so, and this is more for my political people. We're so vested in winning that internal contest that we'll say and do anything. And I've had a saying for a long time that someone that's willing to say and do anything to win an election is capable of doing anything after they win. And I think that's the standard that I'd like to start seeing us all trying to embrace of, let's be better people. Let's not think that the world is going to end tomorrow if we don't win this argument right now today. Let's have a debate. Let's have a discussion. Let's keep it honest. Let's keep it light. Let's not make it so that we want to be like the Eagles fans who beating them on the field wasn't enough. They wanted to physically and emotionally torment, you know, break the windows on the bus, and, you know, That disgusting banner that someone thought was a great idea to make and parade around Philadelphia with. Let's stop doing that within politics in our society. We're not going to be able to fix this if we don't start to pull back and stop this just bitter nastiness. And I think that's just, you know, we got to get to know each other and stop putting each other into these boxes of good and evil. You know, right or wrong, or you're not in my tribe, therefore, you're my enemy. It's just, anyways. Approaching 20, 30 minutes here, so I think we'll cut this episode to an end here. Thank you for listening. This is And For Other Things by Andy Aplikowski. You can go to andforotherthings.com is where you'll be able to find these, and look forward to doing more of these.